adversary is adept at separating us from our past. This is far more than making history seem boring and unnecessary. It's a hellish strategy aimed at keeping us from understanding our origins so we can never quite grasp our destiny. If we don't know our past, we are more prone to repeat the mistakes of our fathers and mothers. That means we are more likely to fall into the same traps of hatred, jealousy, ignorance, poverty, and sickness, and less likely to appropriate the blessings of our heritage. In that sense, we become like Esau, a foolish man ignorant of his heritage, who lived only for the present and willingly surrendered his destiny for a bowl of soup. This is why I cherish my family's story. My Scottish-American ancestors established their permanent presence in North Carolina in 1746. That's a significant year for Scots. It was the year the English broke the power of the Highland clans at the Battle of Culloden and forever extinguished the hope of the Scots to have one of their own as king. My ancestors were among thousands who deemed it better to seek the promise of life and redemption in the New World than remain in darkness, fear, and oppression in the land of their birth. My wife's family has a similar story. At the height of the Great Depression, when drought transformed the fertile fields of Kansas into the Dust Bowl, her mother's parents looked on in agony as grinding poverty and increasingly toxic environment cut short the lives of their neighbors. Seeing no better option, they packed their five children in their car and set out for the Pacific Northwest in search of a new life. That decision eventually brought the family to Washington, where they not only survived, but thrived. Every family has stories like that. We've all been uprooted and transplanted to new places where we forged new identities. Maybe your story is of ancestors ripped from Africa and compressed through the Middle Passage to the harsh reality of the auction block in Havana or Charleston. Maybe your story is of ancestors displaced from fertile woodland homes to arid reservations, only to see that reserved land steadily whittled away by outsiders who realized it wasn't as arid and worthless as they thought. Or maybe your ancestors were bombed out of their homes by a self-proclaimed empire of liberty, only to be resettled in a part of that empire where they built a hybrid identity, partly taken from their old culture and partly assimilated into the new. The continuous forging of new identities over eons has made us all rootless vagabonds who really don't know who we are. That's why our Creator offers us completely new identities in His covenant kingdom. This is what Paul writes about, explaining that our Redeemer is creating within Himself one new man from the two groups, making shalom and reconciling both to God in one body through the cross by which He put the hostility to death. The two groups, of course, are the native-born Hebrews, today known as the Jewish people, and we foreigners of questionable identity born in the nations. It's a curious thing how this can be, and sometimes it's hard to understand and accept. Too often we see it in absolutes, as in the Jewish people must somehow become Gentiles to embrace the Messiah of Israel, or that we Gentiles must somehow become Jewish because the Messiah we follow is Jewish. That's what provokes the enmity that has raged among us for millennia, to the hurt of us all. God, however, weeps, because what He wants most is for all His people to live in peace. This is an understanding that dawned slowly on me over the years. Part of that process involved taking a closer look at another point Paul made. Clean out the old leaven so that you may be a new lump, just as you are in fact unleavened. For Christ our Passover also has been sacrificed. Therefore, let us celebrate the feast not with the old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. Paul wrote this to the Gentile followers of Messiah Yeshua. It seems he expected them to know about and even observe what Christians often call the Jewish feast of Passover. In looking closer at this, I began to realize that our Messiah is very much part of the feast. He's right there in the symbol of the Passover lamb, selected on the 10th day of the Hebrew month of Nisan. It was on that date that Yeshua entered Jerusalem, welcomed as the anointed Son of David. Over the next 4 days, the Passover lamb was examined to make sure it was suitable to be offered for the feast, just as Yeshua was examined with hard questions by the authorities of his day. Then, on the day of preparation for the Passover, the lamb was slaughtered, just as Yeshua was executed on the day of preparation. The blood of the Passover lamb provided the covering over the homes of the ancient Hebrews and all those gathered with them, so the judgment of death passed from their doors. Yeshua's blood served the same purpose, according to the testimony of the high priest Caiaphas. But one of them, Caiaphas, who was high priest that year, said to them, "You know nothing. You don't take into account that it is better for you that one man die for the people, rather than for the whole nation to be destroyed." This is the significance of the Passover lamb. In Egypt, it was better for a lamb to die than for the whole nation to be destroyed, either through the angel of death that fateful night, or by the slow death of assimilation and cultural genocide that threatened to transform the Hebrew nation into another expression of Egypt. The Hebrews who put the lamb's blood on their doors, and the Egyptians and others who gathered with them, made the same choice my Scottish ancestors made. They opted to walk away from certain destruction and walk into a future where there was nothing certain except the promise of life. My Scottish ancestors sailed away from their Highland identity and in time embraced their new American identity, an identity they flavored with the riches they brought with them from the highlands. In the same way, the multitudes who fled Egypt traded their Egyptian loyalties and identities for a new identity as Hebrews, as the covenant people of God, a new identity flavored with the riches they brought with them from the valley of the Nile. I see this same story reenacted time and again throughout human history. It resonates with us because we are all still searching for our eternal identity. Whatever we have been, our Redeemer offers something new if we accept His offer and enter into covenant with Him. Having entered that covenant by faith, I now look on that ancient drama of the Hebrews in Egypt as part of my own story. I call those Hebrews my ancestors as surely as I call those North Carolina Scots my ancestors. Whether we are related by blood is not as important as the fact that we are covered by the blood. That is the eternal identity we have sought ever since our first ancestors bartered it away in the Garden of Eden. It is the identity that truly unites all humanity. This is the mystery our adversary wants to prevent us from discovering. For far too long, his wicked schemes have divided us from our ancient stories and from each other. Why do we continue to play into his hands by insisting we have nothing in common? Maybe it would be better to come together under the covering of the Passover lamb so that our joy and the joy of our Redeemer may be complete.
To wonder, Lord, I feel it. Prone to leave the God I love. Here's my heart, Lord, take and seal it. Seal it for thy core.